far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode,
Happy Alvis Day and Merry Christmas, where this year we review Penguin's Memory.
Well,
I am now, so I just started recording.
Oh, okay. Cool. Welcome to the Anime Yesteryear Podcast.
Merry Christmas to all our listeners of the Anime Yesteryear Podcast. This is our Christmas special, and this time, instead of reindeer and snowmen, there's penguins. So it is winter-themed.
Right. It's very Christmas spirit with PTSD penguins and the Delta War.
A.K.A. Deer Hunter, the movie, the penguin, or like the penguin reenactment of Deer Hunter, the movie, kind of, sort of, not really.
Yeah. So apparently the history of this thing is some beer company made it.
Alright. Well, let's go ahead and pull up the title real quick. Well, I clicked on the link, so why is it?
It's called A Penguin's Memory that we're reviewing.
Yeah, but there's like, I thought it was like an extended, okay, there it goes.
There's something about happiness, too. Like the quest for happiness, or a tale of happiness.
Yeah. So, Penguin's Memory, this is an anime I've been interested in watching for the past few years, that apparently no one has been able to want to bother fan-subbing until just recently. The group that put it out, it was something that CG linked us. And, crap, I gotta, hold on, let me check my anime file. And I'll do a quick search and see what that, see who the fan sub. Orphan. There's a group called Orphan that fan subbed it recently. And it came off
of the... Yeah, I never heard of them before this.
But, I know.
I don't know if CG is affiliated with them or if it's just somebody he knows of.
Well, I mean, I'm aware of Orphan because I've got a few fan subs of theirs. But it's apparent the version we saw was off of a Laserdisc rip that these people fan subbed.
Oh, does it say that like in the show notes for the release or something?
Well, no. I mean, I'm looking at the I'm looking at the file right now, and it just says, you know, Orphan, A Penguin's Memories. I mean, that's got an parentheses LD, which usually it's a Laserdisc rip.
Okay. Does this thing even have like a DVD or Blu-ray in Japan?
You know,
or VHS?
As far as I know, probably not.
It seems like it's something that's probably forgotten about by almost everybody.
Yeah,
I mean, it's such a strange like piece of anime history, though.
It is.
Because it's such a weird concept.
Yeah. I mean, even in the... I mean, the website you pulled up is Annie Pages, or it's at PELLEAS.net. I mean, the guy who runs this website is a knowledgeable guy by the name of Ben Ettinger. And, I mean, even in the description, like the third paragraph down, he says that Penguin's Memory is essentially the Deer Hunter via Sanrio. I'm not sure what he means by Sanrio, but, like, again, like...
That's, like, the company that makes Hello Kitty.
Okay, so...
It has that kind of cutesy, like, circular design to all the characters where they look very childlike.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you want to watch the Deer Hunter but animate it and make it a kid's version, sort of, then this would be the movie. Because Deer Hunter is not a movie that should be watched by kids.
Yeah, I mean, this. I don't know if this is really a kid's movie either, because I don't think they would understand it, really. But it seems like something that's aimed at adults, because it's based on some beer company advertisements. But it's just like, wait, then why are they penguins? So that's the whole bizarre aspect of it.
Well,
but I guess you can just do that, you know, like there's no real reason why the characters in regular show have to be like a raccoon and a bird, you know, like, or any given cartoon where the characters are anthropomorphic. A lot of the cases they could just be human and it would be no different.
Yeah, that's true. I think with Penguin's Memory, it came out of that anime boom era of the 80s. I mean, this came out in 85, so it was a lot of, like, whatever money was being thrown by people who wanted to do promotions for something or even make their own anime. Like, there was it's kind of like a golden age era of, like, anybody could, if they had the funding, which most of them did, they can pretty much make whatever they wanted. So then, I guess the company that put this out, or it was based on the beer company, it was like, hey, let's take this mascot, and we like the Deer Hunter so much, so let's just tone that down and, you know, make it about a man's journey, you know, trying to get over war and make it into a love story, which I gotta say works pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a pretty good movie, but, you know, I do wonder why they didn't just make it a live action or something. But I guess that some animators thought, like, you know, we can push the boundaries of what animation can do.
Yeah.
Even, like, cute-looking children's animation and you know, I don't think a kid would really, like, appreciate or understand anything about this movie other than that there's, like, a couple of songs where the penguin children are, like, singing and playing in the park. But, like, the main character's struggles, I don't think they would really, like, even get what he was going through or why or anything.
Yeah. I mean, like, kids can watch it, but a lot of that theme's just going to kind of fly over. I mean, you show them the singing parts and the kids having fun, and the kids, like, kids would get that, but the rest of it is, you know, totally for adults. So, like, it's kind of, like, interesting when CJ was talking about this a couple years ago, where he's just like, I can't really picture, like, how, like, who it was this marketed towards. And I have to say, like, I think it's marketed for adults, but
yeah,
I think it's just the animators having fun with it.
Sort of like, you know, some people are probably confused when Space Ghost Coast to Coast first came out because this was like a children's superhero, but now he's like, you know, drinking and swearing and talking about sex and all sorts of things that are in there that you wouldn't usually expect in a cartoon.
Yeah.
and then you end up with a whole block based around that sort of theme of just like subverting the visuals of like children's Hanna-Barbera cartoons and making that into something, you know, darker or that could appeal more to adults. And I guess in a way this is sort of like a predecessor to a lot of what Adult Swim has done and other companies that make cartoons for adults.
Well, since you're
this came out even before The Simpsons did, which was really considered one of the first adult cartoons.
Well, it's funny you're bringing up Adult Swim cartoons because, like, you know, now this is Christmas time, as we like to call it, the Alvis time. The Feast of Alvis, a.k.a. the greatest episode of Space C-Lab 2021.
Yeah.
I have to add that whole bit at the beginning where it's like the birth of Alvis and how he killed for your sins.
Yeah.
Anyway, I had to get that out. No one ever brings up Alvis time anymore. It's pretty sad. But
it seems like the Festivus from Seinfeld is more remembered of the fake Christmas holidays than Alvis. I don't see it mentioned very much anymore.
Yeah. I thought there was another... I know there's a couple other fake Christmas holidays. I just can't think of what they are right now.
There's Life Day from the Star Wars holiday special. They made a reference to that in the new Supergirl episode.
Only you saw that. I haven't seen the holiday special.
Oh, yeah, that's probably for the best.
I know. That's why. Yeah. Why do you think I'm not watching it?
Have you even seen clips of it or anything?
I've seen clips of it, like, when Nostalgia Critic talked about it years ago, but that was about... I was like, well, this is all I need to know. And I hate to be that guy that's just like, oh, I'm only taking it at face value. I'm not really diving into the greatness of what this is. I'm like, well, that was never great to begin with. So...
Oh yeah, I'm not going to defend it, but I've seen it several times. I think it's really funny, but yeah, it's terrible.
I don't know why you put yourself in that position, but then again, you are the person that likes to watch like these CW superhero shows and complain about every single thing about them. Like, well, why do you subjugate yourself to Supergirl and complain about all the hashtag whatever they want to try to promote that week, and how like everyone's in a lesbian relationship and how it's not working out, or some marriage or something stupid, and then going on. Yeah. I see. I'm just like regurgitating everything you're writing on the Slack chat.
So, right. Yeah. I don't know why Josh and I watch the shows.
I don't know why either.
Watch them too. But,
and I gave up on Gotham like years ago. What are they, season 5 by now or something?
Yeah. Well, Gotham is okay compared to the CW shows, really.
But yeah, that's the way I understand it. You have less to complain about on Gotham.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff on there. But anyway, we got pretty far off the Penguin thing.
Yeah,
I don't know how to even really summarize the plot, because, I mean, it starts out with 10 minutes of Vietnam, or the Delta War, as they call it.
Yeah, I guess the Delta War, I don't know. Like, I like to think that the Delta War was started by, like, I guess it's just them like, hey, we really like that Chuck Norris Delta Force movies. Just like put penguins in there. What that actually reminds me of is, I don't know if you're familiar with anime regarding animals fighting war, but there's an anime called Cat Shit 1.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, it came from a manga, and I think it's animated somewhat, but I know they did like a CGI of it, like, you know, in the early 2000s, where it's like these little bunnies that have, they're like souped, like, you know, tacked on with a bunch of tactical like army gear and whatever, and they're taking out terrorists, and the terrorists they're taking out are basically like camels because they're in the Middle East.
I could see them getting in trouble for them.
Well, I think they only made like one OVA to it, and it's really cute. Like, you see the bunnies hop across the desert, and I just keep thinking of Squeaky Shoes sound effects, and it's like, oh, they're so cute, but then they just murk that camel. It's the early 2000s or mid 2000s or something. I heard about it from good old Alpha Counter podcast, rest in peace. Because I know Sean.
Well,
Ryan,
there's also not anime, but there's Team America: World Police. I guess it's another kind of political.
Yeah, but
war
that doesn't that
movie,
doesn't.
But also comedy.
The only thing with Team America that involves animals is the Deadly Panthers, which are just black house cats that attack the marionette dolls.
Yeah,
that's true. That's a good movie. Okay, so, yeah, basically this is, we never get to see who the enemy is or who the penguins are fighting against. They're just being gunned down by whatever. And, I mean...
Well, there's, like, some penguin villagers or something that are walking, and then they get killed, and I assume that those are just the people of the Delta region, and, that, like, the whole world is penguins. Like, they never show any other races. Other than that,
well,
you don't see
any kind of other animals other than penguins in this. It's not really races. Penguins don't have a race.
I don't know. So there's no Vietnamese penguins or anything, but yeah. they've got that little small bird that's named Chico. So it's like they're not only penguins in this world, and there's also a little dog that shows up in some scenes in the park.
Okay.
So there are other animals in there, but none of them are sentient like the penguins.
Yeah,
which is kind of weird. It's like in Sonic 06 where you got Sonic, and then you've got like non-sentient dogs that are realistic that are standing right next to him, or Mario Odyssey is another one that has that.
Okay,
and it's like wait, why do they have some of the animals be like anthropomorphic and talking, and some of them not? It's a strange mix.
Well, that's also a strange game too.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm guessing the penguins the other penguins are fighting are like, I mean, are they like Delta Kong or Viet Delta or whatever? Are they like the equivalent of like the NVA or the Viet Cong of penguins or something?
Well, they never mentioned communism why they're fighting in that war.
It just happens to be a war, and our main guy Mike is in it.
Right, so people kind of assume it's Vietnam, I guess, because
Vietnam, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because that's what they made movies about back then all the time. There were all these,
that's true, yeah.
You know, Rambo and Deer Hunter and all these movies that were,
yeah,
you know, based on people going to Vietnam and then coming back and they're all screwed up because there's a big social problem.
Apocalypse Now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Full Metal Jacket, I guess. I don't know if that was before or after this, kind of mid-80s, though.
No, Full Metal Jacket was the early 80s, so this was before this.
Okay, yeah. But I guess they just thought, like, well, here's a trend of what's going on in Hollywood. You know, maybe beer drinkers will like this, so we'll put, like, a a penguin who's been in the war and our advertisements for our beer company, and then we'll make a movie about it or something. But they never really show the penguin drinking beer in the movie, from what I recall, which is kind of weird.
Well, actually, I was going to bring up some information on this. As far as I know, I remember hearing this in an old Anime World Order episode where it was a con. I'm not sure if it was Anime Boston or another con or Anime Con that was in Boston. But it was, I think it was specifically signed for like assigned for like people 21 and up. It didn't last long, of course. But what I understood was that this movie was shown fan sub by somebody at that convention. So it has been fan sub before. Regardless of where that fan sub is, I have no idea. Other than if it's
the person another podcast has talked about this.
Yes, Anime World Order did like years ago. I remember them; they brought it up in an episode once, and I was like, "Huh, I wonder where that fan sub might be." But
so, did they watch the film at that con? And
no, I think they were just reporting on it, and that's one of the titles they brought up. I think they had Mike Tool. Mm. I think it was an episode where Mike Tool was on there because he's from the Boston area, and he was talking about the convention. So they brought up Penguin's Memory.
Okay.
And but that's the only time I can think of, like, as far as I know, that this, like, at least it's someone has fan subbed this movie. But in terms of it being released to the public,
previously, but he couldn't find it. Like, it was available on like an old VHS that was being circulated.
Yeah, that might have been. I mean, that might have been shown at that Anime Con. I'm not sure, but
probably.
I mean, but again, as far as I know, like, that's the only like time that I'm aware of that this has been fan subbed at one point. And then now that this Orphan came out and did their own fan sub, now it's more open to download and for people to view it. And again, like we brought up we just mentioned the website from Ben Ettinger, and he's the only other person that's really gone into depth about Penguin's Memory. So it's a really unique movie. But essentially it's about, to kind of sum it up, I mean, it's about a guy who, or a penguin, I should say, that is in a war, and he's got two buddies that are with him, and they wind up getting killed off. I mean, the guy with the big M60 machine gun, like, gets knocked off the chopper when they're being attacked. So then Mike is the only one out of his friend group in the war, out of his buddies, to make it out of there alive and come back home. And when he comes back home, he's treated as a war hero, even though he doesn't want the honor or the attention at all. So then he decides to leave his family and kind of wander around the world and figure, I guess it's more of those like discovering yourself, trying to figure out like who you are, where do you belong. And, so then Mike comes to this town. He gets a job as a librarian. He meets a girl. The girl is already engaged to some rich doctor, and the rich doctor is already fooling around on her with another penguin. And, so then it gets into this whole thing about like, you know, the girl wants to be a singer. She's really good at it. And then, of course, there's a decision if she wants to do a professional singing gig. She finds out who her mother is, which her mother is this person that runs this bar that they usually, that's kind of this other,
you mean, like, this penguin.
Penguin, yes. Thank you for correcting me. And, so then Penguin Mom owns this bar, and they eventually figure out that, you know, the mother knew who her daughter was. She just was too embarrassed to, you know, cause she left her and her husband, which is the girl's or the penguin's dad. Or Jill is her name, and to go do her singing career that never took off. And then, eventually it's, you know, Mike, you know, trying to have peace, like, you know, does this girl really love me or whatever? And then it gets in the whole thing where, like, you've got the talent manager that is trying to do everything he can because he's going to roll in with all these money and women based off her voice. And now that it's in jeopardy because she's in love with Mike, or Jill is, that he sends his two goons to his apartment to rough him up, and then Mike just snaps and goes off on him, and then that eventually leads to him being kicked out of the town and wanting to go to these two places, these exotic places that he really wanted to see, like, as his, like, lifelong dream. And then it ends with Jill meeting up with him at the end of the crossroads, and yeah. And then so, like, it winds up being a happy ending in the end, so.
Yeah. What I thought was a bit weird was that, I guess in Japan, you can't defend yourself.
Yes, so.
Because this guy got 3 years for after some guy broke into his apartment and killed the bird and was trying to kill him and his girlfriend, you know, then he defends himself and attacks him, and then he goes to jail for 3 years.
Yeah, well, I thought it was like a suspended sentence of 3 years, but then he just leaves the town. I mean, yeah, like, he didn't show him going to jail. He sat and holding. That's the only jail he saw.
Well, they showed him in a jail, but I guess it was
just that's called holding. That's not real jail.
Yeah, but still, I mean, like, why does he even face charges? You know.
Yeah, but he's like kind of extricated or whatever from like the city that he's in. So then...
I thought he just chose to leave because he didn't like the attention going down on him, or
maybe
they wanted him to go. But he seemed like he was kind of wandering and like having problems wherever he went, and that was like the theme of the movie, was like how difficult his life is. And
yeah, and it's just him trying to find peace with himself after being in that war, and like
because he's got this like scene that they show where he's they're all like in the cave after one of them gets injured, and then they're like playing the harmonica, and so he's like haunted by the harmonica melody, which they kind of play throughout the movie.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of, you know, dark stuff there. I mean, it's not the Punisher or something in terms of like the degree of graphicness of, you know, them showing people dying and that sort of thing, but you know, they do show his comrades dying at the start of the movie, and the helicopter attack, and
helicopters, you know, get exploded, and
first 10 minutes or so is alone makes it not a kid's movie, just because so many people getting killed at the start there, and they probably don't want to see a bunch of penguins getting massacred.
Yeah, I guess it kind of reminds me of like Born on the 4th of July, when Tom Cruise comes back to his hometown, and like they treat him as a war hero, even though he's like got severe PTSD as his character. I guess it's a little bit of that, because I guess they, you know, because like his whole family's badgering him on war stories. Like, oh, tell us what you did. Tell us how you, like, saved people. And he's just like, I didn't really do anything. I survived. That's kind of my major war story. And then they're like, oh, come on, son, don't be so bashful. And that just really got to him, and then that, like, caused him to leave.
They were saying stuff like, oh, you must have been one of the really good ones because you survived or something. And I think he felt like that was being kind of disrespectful to those who didn't survive.
Yeah. Because Al was the one with the freaking machine gun that did all the work for the group, because he was always covering fire. That's kind of the purpose of an assault weapon like that. But yeah, and then it's kind of like, you know, to Mike, probably like, you know, why couldn't Al live? Like, Al was like a good guy. Like, you know, he should have deserved to live instead of me.
Yeah, that's something you see in a lot of Japanese movies where people are like, oh, I should have died and not him. He died protecting me. And I guess that's kind of a samurai code sort of thing that's still a vestige in their culture of wanting to sacrifice yourself for your friends and that sort of thing.
Well, I think it's more of a, like an honorable thing too. So I mean, like, because you compare yourself to like the person that always stuck his neck out to protect you, and I mean, like, him dying was the cause of that, but you're like, no, he was a better person than I was.
But he also doesn't really beat himself up and whine as much as you would see in a lot of movies. He's very stoic. Throughout most of the movie, he's expressionless, and then at the end, he snaps and goes nuts on that guy in the apartment. And that's kind of interesting that they did that. And I don't know. I guess to have the character be a penguin with so little expression. I mean, that's one of the weird things about the movie, is that you can't really show that much expression on their faces because they have these huge round eyes that one dot.
Yeah, it's this two little dotted eyes, and Mike always has that million mile stare about him about whenever he talks, and he's really always like really just down on himself and sad. I mean, he's gone through a lot. I mean, even with him. He went to that, like, he was in the city at one point, and there was, like, a fight club going on, and he, like, wanted to, you know, get into a fight with, like, the big brute there, and then he wound up, like, holding back because he thought of, like, a flashback and got his butt kicked.
Yeah. That was early on, before he met Jill, and he just sort of didn't know what to do, and I don't know if he's going to continue to be a librarian in a different town or what he'll do after what he went through.
I just imagine, like, I'm not sure, like, because the movie ends, like, with him at the crossroads where he wanted to go to Sunset Beach or the mountain, and then Jill showed up, And I can't remember what path they took. Maybe they went to the mountain, but I'm sure they'll find wherever they go, they've both got their happiness and peace with each other. So that's kind of like the main thing at the end.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, she was, you know, this conflict that you see in a lot of movies of, do you want to go with your heart or do you want to go with your career? And
yeah,
she had to choose between, does she want to be a famous singer or does she want to do what's going to make her happy? And
yeah,
so everyone in the character has, I mean, every one of the main characters has some sort of dilemma that they're going through. And I thought the actress was pretty good. It's Bulma from Dragon Ball, who just, the actress just died a few weeks ago.
Yeah, she recently passed away.
And this was one of her first roles. And
wow.
I guess she was some sort of a pop idol in the 80s because there's a lot of her singing, including just randomly singing in the park with children and that sort of, you know, very childish scene there in the park, and like it sticks out a lot from the rest of the movie. But I think it's just to express like she's a sort of carefree and innocent at the beginning of the movie, and
yeah,
then she has this issue with the two penguin men that are having their little penguin slap fight over her, and at the bar that one night when,
yeah, that's
when they find out that she's engaged. And
well, no, the doctor guy shows up and he's just like, yeah, Jill's my fiance, I didn't know if you knew that or she was going to tell you that. But even with the doctor, like, he's the one that, like, in the end he's just like, you know, you're a better man than I am for Jill. It's just like, you know, she likes you more and I can live with that, because with him he's like, I already got a girl on the side, I'm pretty good with that, I don't really need Jill. So, and he was more happier with the other nurse. So,
it surprised me the way it went down, because when he shows up halfway through the movie, I thought, well, now they've finally got a conflict of somebody that the main character is going to have to fight, and the penguins are going to be in dispute over the penguin girl.
Yeah.
But then only a couple minutes pass, and then the next day they, or maybe it's a little longer than a day, but.
Yeah.
Not long after, they meet up in the park, and the doctor's like, oh, hey there, I think I'll just let you have her because that's what love is for and that sort of thing. And he seems more understanding than you think he'd be. And so then you have to have a new villain introduced.
Yeah.
And then that's
the scout manager person. And then he's got his two goons. Which I was like, where were they? Where did they show up? Like, how did he hire them? Because the manager seemed like he was such a poor person. Like, oh, she's my big break. She's my meal ticket, you know, out of this joint. And, you know, like, she's my cash cow. I'm going to get...
Being gritty.
Yeah, I'm getting all the mansions and the women and the cars and swimming pools and the yachts. And, you know, how dare she turn back on me? Yeah.
And those were interesting to see because they're probably the most visually... you know, visually exciting part of the film. A lot of it is kind of slow, and I think probably it's a pretty low budget movie, but it doesn't look bad. It's just weird style, kind of simple.
Well, I mean, like, it's simple animation. I mean, like, it's not like these crazy. I mean, it's a film actually. I mean, like, it's an over an hour. You know, it's an over an hour and a half.
Right, it's like an hour 40 minutes long.
Yeah. So really, like, the animation's limited, but, like, it still tells a good story.
Yeah, and it doesn't have any glaring animation mistakes that stuck out to me or anything.
No,
I didn't see any characters colored wrong or anything
I was just, I was just happy with the story, to be honest. Like, I was good with that. I was like, okay, like, because I would always skim through, like, the raw file that I've had. I'm like, and I'm always like, I wonder what they're talking about. I wonder what's going on. So then now we got the fan sub version of it now, and now everything makes sense. It's like, well, this is actually this all makes sense now. So
Previously I had just seen the GIFs that CJ always includes in his Twitter account and everything, and he always posts in the chat. It'll be like the penguin doing something. Because I guess he's a really huge fan of the movie, and he's been talking about it for a long time in the chat, and
yeah.
I don't know what specifically it was that got him interested in it, because I don't think it's a co-production between two countries, which is usually what would get him.
Or it's not. It has nothing. It has nothing to do with like. What is it? Is he? I can't think of the show that he's always complaining about. That like all they took it off the air. Like, is it like? It's not Digimon. It's like.
It is Digimon.
Oh crap! Okay, then it's like this has nothing to do with Digimon. So like, you know, kind of like, why do you care?
Digimon and Pretty Cure and
Peebles.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Arc 5.
Oh, Yu-Gi-Oh! That's the other one. He's always like, oh, I don't see it on the website. I guess they took it off.
And Sonic X.
Sonic X.
But yeah, this one I guess he was interested in it because it's anthropomorphic animals in it, I would assume.
At least I give him like credit for liking something better than Yu-Gi-Oh! And Digimon.
Yeah.
This to me compares and ranks up higher than those two titles.
Yeah, I mean, this has a lot going for it. It is pretty good.
Yeah.
I would say people should check it out. It's very unique anime.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot like this one from the 80s. You know, they were anime for adults, but they tended to be ultra violent kind of things.
Yeah, had plenty of sex and gore and swearing and tough guys, and this one is just kind of like a really nice watered down version of the Deer Hunter. So
a lot of stuff gets called mature when it's sort of like a teenager's concept of what maturity is. Whereas this I think is maybe actually more of a mature film than probably any other anime that I've seen. even though it looks like a kid's film, it's not really in any way.
We should probably add the subtitle to this movie as, Penguin's Memory, a.k.a. Lost Flippers and Rice Patties. That's what you said in the chat.
Yeah, just in the chat. Yeah, one of the emotions. The first scene. Did you want to use that as a transition to talk about Ghost or anything?
I mean, eventually we will, yeah. I mean, like, my other joke for this was just like, you know, I wonder if Mike and the gang were part of some sort of, like, SOG Penguin Division under like Colonel Gunther from Adventure Time or something. I don't know. Like, if you're like, since you mentioned Cartoon Network shows, I was like,
yeah.
I wonder if it was like a studies and like observation group, because there was a lot of SOG units in Vietnam at the time.
I noticed that the article said that they were pretty accurate on what they were including for the weaponry that was included for the Vietnam scenes.
Yeah, they had M16s and M60s and the Huey choppers, and so yeah, I mean it was. I mean they had some like, you know, pretty detailed drawings for that movie for like the weapons and stuff. So
yeah, it was pretty well drawn, and I guess the main drawback with the art style is just there's only so much you can show with a penguin's eyes.
Yeah.
Compared with like a human being's eyes.
Well, I mean,
but in a way it also makes it more interesting because the actors have to put more into their performance to really sell it.
Every day you come in the studio, oh, I gotta play a penguin again today. I'm a PTSD penguin that's going through coming back from a Vietnam War. Okay, that's your motivation. Go. What I found interesting was the doctor in this movie was someone called Dr. Moe MD.
Oh, was that different than Tom? There was like another doctor as well.
Yeah, like it was on the freaking door. I have to get a screen cap of that. Like I think it was Tom. Well, I can only remember that maybe his name was Tom, the one that was engaged to Jill. But he goes into Dr. Moe's office and they talk about something. I just saw it on the door. I was just like, and I wrote it in the chat. I figured he would have like caught that or something.
Okay. Yeah, I did see you mention that.
Okay. So I had to get a screen cap of Dr. Moe. And all I could think about was the Dr. Feelgood song. Like, he's the one they call it Dr. Moe. He's gonna make you feel alright. He's gonna plush together a Frankenstein. Of your favorite Moe girl. I don't think there's anything else. I think we kinda covered everything, so.
How much time do we spend on the anime?
Oh, we're 33 minutes into this.
Well, that's pretty short for this.
Well, I mean, like, the movie is an hour, about, you know, a little over an hour and a half, so really talking about it for 30 minutes is about all we need to do, so.
And we did stay on topic largely this time, which is unusual.
we did so good.
Yeah. We only went a little bit off topic.
Yeah, this might be, like, one of the shortest episodes we've done this year, depending on how long closing remarks goes for.
Yeah.
I mean, what do we got to... Oh, I got some things to say. So
I'm just looking through Ghost's gab to see if there's anything funny.
Okay, well,
he was ranting about the Roy Moore thing, of course.
Oh, So, anyways, big news for me: I graduate Friday. I am done with college.
Good. I mean, it's that's something that you've been working for, and I'm glad it all worked
six
out
and
for
a
you.
Half, and... 6.5 years over a course of 3 podcasts.
Yeah. Maybe. Wait, did you start this during the Cool Kids Club?
Yes. Well, I was in. Oh. We did the Cool Kids Club when I was part of it. That's when I like got fired from my old job and started going back to school. And so
but you had gone to a different school than this one before it, right?
Yeah, I went to a tech club. School for 2 years, and then I switched over to Anderson University.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, maybe like now that I'm done with school, like should we just stop the podcast and come up with a new name to keep up with tradition? No, if I'm not in school, or at least not getting my master's degree now, like maybe I should just go ahead and it has to be end, because this podcast can only exist if I'm getting my education. Screw it, I'm going for my doctorate, that's another 10 more years. That's 10 more years of podcasting.
Now you're pursuing a PhD in anime studies, and it'll be awarded by PG or something once you've watched The Penguin's Memory enough times.
I mean, I think Brian Ruh is a guy that does like a Japanese. He's got a PhD or either a master's in like Japanese studies. So I mean, like, and he basically wrote the book on Mamoru Oshii. I mean, yeah, so people write their master thesis on anything. I've heard people write their master thesis on, like, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Like, there's people that dedicated to Buffy to write a master thesis on it for whatever degree their master's is going to be. But it's going to be something related with Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, you can do anything now. Especially if you're going to say it's like, oh, this film advances feminism and... I mean, to get a gender studies explanation of how Penguin's memory gives so much agency to the Penguin girl, and she gets to choose between her two Penguin boyfriends. And
yeah.
You just write a whole PhD about Penguin's memory.
Or Penguin's memory gender studies or something.
Yeah. About the different genders of penguins.
And then they
might
say
this is problematic because there are only two genders in the film.
Well, then that's when you relate it to, like, this doesn't work because LGBT... Then you can disprove that, like, it doesn't work because of how flawed those characters are. And if they're LGBT, then it would be an even better movie if they just went through that formula. So then you can try to, like, tweak your master thesis that way. Because, you know, anybody can accept anything as a master's thesis, it seems. It's such a freaking joke. But...
I mean, there's this case of the penguins that were gay or whatever at some zoo that people like to hype up, and so that sort of this film is unrealistic because it doesn't contain any gay penguins.
That's how I feel about some of these master theses. It's like you're taking like okay, this is this is an example I've thought of, especially like in terms of religion, where you know basically like. You got, like, you know, the people that are Mormons. And this is coming from someone with a Christian perspective. And it's kind of like when people, like, bring up that, like, you know, the Mormons and say they're also Christian. It's kind of like you coming into, a D&D campaign. Or you're showing up with a D&D group. And you're like, hey, guys, I'm ready to play. And then instead of you bringing the right D&D manual, you're bringing in Shadowrun. Or, you know, some other tabletop RPG. And it just doesn't fit together. Like, yeah, it's a tabletop game, but it's the wrong tabletop game compared to what everyone else is doing. And that's kind of how I personally see the Book of Mormon when they like try to compare it and like source it from the Bible when it always contradicts each other. So it's kind of like with the, like, you know, what you're saying with the penguin thing. It's like you're taking two things, opposite shapes, and trying to super glue them and duct tape them together and say, there's my master's thesis. And it's just a garbled mess. And it's like, well, they tried hard, so I guess we'll give it to them.
Yeah, I guess the Penguin's Memory works a little bit better than the Book of Mormon, or
I'd say so too. But I mean, I don't know. We talk about anything in we're already officially closing remarks territory. So, I mean, I already mentioned my graduation, so I'm looking for work now. I'm actually looking at English speaking jobs in Japan. So I applied to the JET program. I haven't heard back from them. I'm not sure if that's going to go through or not. I did get an email back from Cartoon Network on the video editing job. They said the position's filmed, but it was only like a spring internship. So it probably wouldn't, I don't think it would have paid enough. But now I'm kind of looking at, there's a couple places in Japan I'm looking for, like looking towards. So it's just, you know, just putting my name out there and just seeing what happens. So. But in terms of me, like, keeping myself busy after I graduate, like, I got plenty of stuff for the county to do. I've got plenty of little projects to work on. So I am set in terms of job-wise and keeping myself occupied for a while. I am not bored.
Yeah, that's good that you've got some opportunities there. And you think that you're going to end up moving to Japan? Or
I would like to. It depends on, I mean... Depends on where God wants me to be. So that's just the way I look at it. But I feel like that's where I need to be, but it's just a matter of just like seeing which opportunity opens up and, you know, if and when it happens. Maybe it won't happen now, but maybe it could happen in a year or so. I mean, who knows? But it does not hurt to try and knock on doors and just see which one opens up. And which one greets you the most. So
yeah, with Cartoon Network, it's probably not a great idea to move there just for an internship or something anyway, because you're not going to be able to pay the rent off an internship.
Yeah, and Atlanta's heck expensive. I mean, I got a buddy that's living there now, and he's basically living, like, to him, Atlanta's nothing but all one big giant ghetto compared to where he lives, which is he's living in one of, like, the nicest areas, like, near a ghetto, and they charge so much for rent because it's part of the city. And he's like, he had like a neighbor below him that like basically had a meth lab and smoked pot a lot. So like he would always wonder why because he lived above them. So all that stench came into like his clothes. So he always smelled like pot. Uh-huh. And he's always like, and then he was also saying like, man, like why does my apartment smell like cotton balls and like mothballs all the time? And then they realized that those people below him, were running a meth lab, so they got evicted. And now his apartment smells a whole lot better. Yes. And he's in one of the most affordable, like, nicest areas in Atlanta, according to him. So, but it's still ghetto. Yeah. But I mean, I'm looking at places like in Greenville too, so. And Greenville, like, I'm really familiar with. So I can probably, I mean, I feel better if I like, you know, found something up there. So it's just a matter, like, you know, we'll see. But yeah, that's where I'm at now. So like the thing is, like, I'm done with school, and I feel like I can easily relax and just like, hey, things are good. I'm out of school, looking for work, figuring out what to do next, and I don't have to worry about homework anymore. I got other things to preoccupy my time. Like podcast editing. I'll be honest, I haven't thoroughly gone through a podcast episode and edited it in probably over a year. I think
you still got that Logan one to put out too.
Yeah. I'm always like, yeah, I know where it's at. I just gotta get around to doing it, and then I just haven't. So anyways, well, that's my life. And so what do we got going on in the world of politics, John?
Well, I just pulled up something where Christian has discovered that Rosa Chu is actually transgender.
Oh my god. Alright, go ahead.
Oh. I have that, and I have Ghost's reaction to the election. So I'll read the Ghost thing first.
Okay.
It says, Doug Jones win in Alabama underscores how the establishment Democrats and Republicans will stop at nothing to get one of them into the institutions of government. They must use this to fuel a 2018 ballot box revolution to unseat all incumbents on both sides. No more career politicians. So I guess that includes Ted Cruz as well. Maybe Ghost will be primarying him in Texas. But I don't think that this is why Doug Jones won in Alabama. I think it's because Roy Moore was a joke and he completely gets screwed over by these sexual assault allegations.
Yeah, and then, of course, people on Twitter are like, look at this guy riding in on a horse to put his ballot in. Like, he's trying to be some, like, you know, John Wayne coming in and voting.
It looked hilarious, actually, because the horse looked, like, totally frightened and, like, disobedient while it was riding in.
Well, I mean,
but somebody, I guess, was so into
are...
it that they put, like, a Roy Moore's horse account dedicated to just tweeting things from the perspective of Roy Moore's horse. Like, that's how into this race that some people were.
Oh, man.
And the horse was tweeting stuff like, please don't vote for him because he'll make me ride into D.C. and I'm afraid of cars.
It's just, like, I mean, the horse is freaked out because you have all these reporters around and it's probably not useful.
I'm sure,
I mean,
that's why. They were taking pictures of it. I don't think you can really blame him fully for it. But,
no.
But it did look hilarious.
I know.
And apparently he does this every time that he votes just to get publicity for himself because he's such a self-promoting guy that, I mean, he's just using religion as a way to promote his own career and to get to...
Yeah.
To children, apparently. I mean, he seems like a really sleazy, messed up guy, and I think that's probably why a lot of people didn't vote for him.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, he did almost win, and he only lost by 1% or something.
Man.
And it probably didn't help that one of the so-called victims had, like, forged a yearbook signature, and that was supposedly some creepy message he wrote in their yearbook, but then they confessed that they just made it up. And,
well, there was also
this fake people going to the Washington Post and trying to make up stories about him. And some of it probably was real, but some of it was fake too.
Is this coming from the same person, or is it two different people that are doing that?
No, this was a real one that had like Gloria Allred as their lawyer, I think I read. And so it's one of these women that, you know, was actually part of the original story, I think. Because there were so many of them, and one of them even got him banned from the mall, which is like something that would happen to Chris Chan, you know, for standing out there with the attraction sign.
It was the fact that, like, I told you about the that email where they're trying to, like, sue for libel, and the lawyer that they picked is like, I mean, like, a 10-year-old could have done a better job writing a legal document to stand up for Roy Moore. And I was like, oh, that's a joke. And that's the one my comm professor read out in class, and we just laughed at it. And then I found that, someone, like, dissected the heck out of it. Yeah.
The tweet that I posted in the chat that didn't you show your professor that one where underlined all the problems?
Yes, I sent him that too. He looked at it briefly. He's like, can you send me a copy of that? I'm like, yes, I can, Professor Duncan.
Yeah, I mean, he had some really incompetent spokespeople. Like, I saw one on CNN, this clip of him where he was arguing with Jake Tapper about whether or not Muslims should be allowed to serve in Congress. And the spokesperson was saying they can't because they need to be sworn in on a Bible. And Jake Tapper was saying, oh, but what about the Jewish and the Muslim members of Congress that don't get sworn in on a Bible, like Keith Ellison, who got sworn in on a Quran. And then the spokesman just stood there for like 30 seconds with just a blank look on his face. Like, he just didn't know how to respond to that, even though that was what the core issue was about, that Moore was against this guy being sworn in on a Quran. So I guess the spokesman just didn't understand what the issue was at all. And he was like, well, you know, when I was in taking my position as a lawyer, I had to swear in on a Bible, so I thought everybody did. And then, okay. And it was just really awkward, and It just seemed like Roy Moore didn't know how to deal with the media at all, and
no.
he just stopped dealing with them entirely a few weeks before the election because he got so fed up with the
yeah.
sexual assault allegations, I guess. But I mean, you can't really win an election when you've got all these dozens of women or however many it is that are coming out against him, and then he kind of stuck his foot in his mouth when he said stuff like, 9/11 happened because America turned its back on God. And
well, there was a lot of pastors. There was a lot of pastors that said that, like at the time of 9/11. Anytime some major like Hurricane Katrina, there was a pastor that mentioned about how this is what happens when America turns their back on God or whatever. Like
he's not the only even one. The earthquake in Haiti. Jerry Falwell, I'm pretty sure, or Pat Robertson said that about that as well. And they say it every time anything bad happens. I mean, there's definitely an audience that like believes that and would go along with him saying that, but I don't know that he's winning any swing voters when he says stuff like that, because the media will just take one soundbite and they'll say like Roy Moore says America deserved 9/11, or Roy Moore says things were better during slavery.
Mm-hmm.
He just had a way of saying things that that the media would jump on. And I don't think he's as good at playing the media as Trump is, because Trump controls the media, and sometimes it works, sometimes it's a disaster. But I don't think Roy Moore really came out on top of any of these scandals. He kind of just kept getting humiliated and going down in the polls.
I mean, his comment about the slavery thing, like, I think I understood where he was trying to come from, but it did not come out well.
Yeah.
Like, I understood what point he was trying to make. Again, he didn't say it right or well enough.
He shouldn't have even brought up slavery.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't say that in terms of like a black person asks you a question about when things were better. And then he says, well, you know, things were used to be better when we were a more moral country, even though we had slavery. Like he shouldn't have said, even though we had slavery, he should have just said, you know, back when, you know, we had more traditional values or something like that.
Yeah.
But he just has a tendency to stick his foot in his mouth and just say something really stupid. And it almost worked. I mean, he did keep his name in headlines and everything, and I guess in a way that's good. But I mean, he did lose, and that's probably to be expected in a way. But it is Alabama, so it's really surprising that they elected a Democrat. So.
I guess that means that Alabama, the football team, is going to lose winning the national championship because they didn't vote. I don't know. I mean, like, they didn't vote a Republican in. I'm pretty sure, like, some, like, diehard Crimson Tide fans are going to say that when Clemson beats them for the FBS championship game. So, I know this is sports talk, and that's the end of sports talk. That was the only thing I can think of is like, oh man, I'm sure there's people there that think like if they get a Democrat, like they'll never win another like college football game ever again, which is fine with me because I can't stand Alabama. But anywho,
I'm sure they'll still support their team.
Yeah, they will, and they're still going to be number one ranked next season, and then one after that as long as Nick Saban's still coaching. So, but this isn't ESPN Sports Talk. This is an anime podcast. I get this too confused all the time. So,
okay, I'm gonna go ahead and read the Christian thing now.
All right.
He says, "Okay, who's ready to have their minds totally royally effed up? Rosie, our prime rose chew, sweetheart of Sonic Chew, was born as a Pichu. The D." Star ED trolls. I guess he's censoring darned.
What? Okay.
We're correct. Up until around the 4 cent garbage adventure, Rosie did have not a vagina but a penis. She had the operation to become a fully woman and gave birth to Christine, Roberta, and Sarah. I guess Chris actually believes that you can reproduce after a gender reassignment surgery. I felt super mortified and beyond shocked when she came out to me as a trans woman herself. Since when I created her after Sonichu around 2000, I had created her to be a female-only Pokemon, like a Kangaskhan. But apparently, even though I am creator, apparently I am not a total goddess over my own city and creations. So I will now put this to everyone online for their responses. Do you like it that for once the trolls were right, or would you rather I revert back to telling everyone in book 15 that Miss Rosie Rosachu was always female? She wanted me to come forward with her truth on her behalf. As much as it really hurts me deep, I really feel like I should be reeled into my Pokeball and stored in a PC for a while. I accept my rose as having been worn male, that is all. Sad face emoji, and then three crying face emojis. He rated his own post sad. So he's like sobbing about something that his made up cartoon hedgehog told him about their gender from 17 years ago, and he's like severely mortified over this.
I have no words. Man, it's just, I mean, one day he's in some sort of weird time warp relationship with hyperdimension Neptunia girls and how they controlled Virginia for a week, and then now it's this, and you just gotta know where this is gonna take us. But you don't want to know.
Yeah. And he was having like an election for the mayor of Quickville as well.
Yeah, I wanted to vote against Chris Chan. I was like, show me the poll. I want to vote against you. I want to get you out of office. You do not deserve to be there in any kind of power anymore. You know, honestly, I think like even if the re-election thing happened, he'd still vote himself in. He'd be like, oh, well, they got assassinated and got sent to like a jerk ops camp, a concentration camp. So then I, Christy Weston Chandler, am now the mayor again through these like the situations. He'll make something up because none of it's real to begin with. So like, what does it matter?
He didn't even make a poll where he was an option. I don't think it was. They were all like weird options, like Chairman Mao and Augusto Pinochet.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was wondering, like, how does he even know who these infamous dictators are? You know, like Chris always seemed very ignorant of historical events and politics and everything. So I almost wonder if some troll demanded that he hold an election or something as part of getting his Xbox account back, or something's going on behind the scenes there. That
he's never had an Xbox account. He's always had a PlayStation.
Right, I thought he got an Xbox at one point, but maybe
he did. I don't know.
He mainly does PlayStation, but yeah, I mean, he was always getting his PS3 account hacked back in the day, so maybe something like that happened, or his email account got hacked, or something. A lot of the time, what he does seems like somebody's pulling the strings. Some troll has something on him that they're making him do this for.
Yeah,
like this weird Cherokeean chant that he did. Like, that reminded me of some of the videos he did for Jackie, where she would demand that he dress up as a genie or in blackface or all these weird videos. And this one, he's like pretending to be an Indian that's doing some sort of rain dance or something. I don't know if you saw this video.
I have no, probably not.
It just came out yesterday.
Oh no, then I haven't seen this. You haven't. Usually, you're pretty good at posting this stuff up in the Slack chat. So then this is how I get my up to date Chris Chan news.
Yeah, the quickie article about it describes it as semi intelligible, and says he appears physically uncomfortable during the video, and that he was heavily drunk on vodka.
If one were to do the things that he does, you would have to be literally drunk on something.
Oh, that reminds me. There's the North Korean defector that died. Did you see this?
Where I did see that. Yeah,
guy that had been drunk, and then he stumbled into North Korea, and then he had to stay there for like 40 years, and then he finally moved to Japan and married a Japanese woman.
I thought he married a Japanese woman in North Korea. Then they both defected or something. I mean,
yeah, I guess he married her beforehand, or met her beforehand. At least
I just know that the guy was hailed as like a hero, like to North Korea for years.
Do they have? I don't know. Do they even have marriage in North Korea? I mean, it's such a different society. I guess they must.
I mean, maybe they did, like, after the Korean War when Kim Jong-un, or Il, was still alive and was probably more mellow and was like, yeah, I can get married. I don't care.
Yeah. But it sounded like there were like 5 or 6 people that had defected in the same time period as him, which was like the 60s through the 80s, and they're all dead now. And at first when I saw the story, I was like, well, who had defected in North Korea? But then it said that he was drunk, and I was like, oh, okay, he just like didn't know what he was doing or something. But
he
did it on a dare and then ruined his life.
Got drunk. Oh, I bet you can't go to the other side of the DMZ and come back in one piece. I'll show you. Well, looks like he didn't.
That's one.
I think he lost that bet.
I think probably no one can even imagine how bad it is to go over there. Like, they don't fathom what it's like to actually defect to North Korea before they do it. Because they had all this propaganda, especially in the olden days, before the internet and everything. There are all these pictures online in North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like they presented themselves as being really prosperous. And you would see, left-wing magazines back then saying, like, oh, North Korea, they're so industrious and successful and prosperous compared to South Korea. They prove how much more economically advantageous communism is compared with capitalism. But now nobody can even pretend that anymore. Because it's so obvious that the technological advancements in South Korea have made them one of the richest and most prosperous countries in the world, where North Korea is the most impoverished and starved country in the world, and most backwards and miserable country with no internet, no electricity.
Yeah.
Starved, midget people that can't even get enough nutrition to fully grow the way a South Korean would,
it's the fact that South Korea also has like a big automobile industry and cell phone company that are in America too. I mean, like, you got Samsung, which is a big, I got a Samsung phone, and then my mom drives a Kia car, so yeah, South Korea is doing pretty well for itself because other people have those things here in America and across the world, so it's kind of hard to make that argument.
I mean, they have very high-speed internet and a higher standard of living. People say, well, but in North Korea, they have universal healthcare or something. But
it's,
I mean,
shit healthcare, but it's universal.
Yeah, universal, like, starvation and impoverishment.
You all get equally treated badly. That is universal healthcare, but the bad kind.
Right. Everybody's universally miserable.
There you go. It's they're not lying. It's just not a good universal.
Yeah. I mean, if everybody's equal at a lower standard than people being unequal but at varying higher standards, you would think people would eventually give up on the concept that, state communism is some brilliant idea that is so good at managing economies when every time it's happened, there have been famines in North Korea and China and Russia. There have always been mass deaths and starvation because there's no, like we would have an individualized agriculture. You have all these collective farms that are completely inefficient and nobody has any incentive to work. And there's no innovation because there's no profit incentive. And, communist economies just don't work, but they still preach that they do in universities and the media. They just haven't caught on, even though the Soviet Union collapsed 25 years ago. But there's still tons of people. I mean, I think probably something like 50% of millennials are communists, according to polls.
Or
so
they want to believe that they're communists or like to be communists in some way. It's like, why?
Yeah,
this
is a system that collapsed, like, in most of the world before they were even born, so they don't know anything about it.
Like, how would you know how bad it was? I mean, like, you didn't watch on the news. I mean, like, we have our communist nations, but I mean, Cuba's now opening the borders. It's becoming more capitalist now. I mean, it's getting its way there.
Yeah, because they had to, because Otherwise, the people would rise up because they're suffering under communism, and
yeah,
there need to be some reforms, or else the regime is going to be in trouble because the people will see, like, oh, why is everywhere else in the world have cars that are 50 years newer than us and have cell phones when we don't, and, you know, just all the different advances that the rest of the world has compared mm-hmm. with Cuba. And they did, like, build up some sort of, I think the CIA made some sort of fake social network site or something to try to get people to be able to use the internet in Cuba just to have some idea of what the rest of the world was like. And I don't know if that's, I think they abandoned it eventually, but I mean, there are ways that people can get around things even if they don't rely on that, you know, just proxy sites and that sort of thing too. Mm-hmm. Because I think they do have internet to some extent there, but, you know, the government tries to censor it in China too. And that's one of the things that makes me concerned about the net neutrality thing is I know that they say that it's all well-intentioned and everything, but when you give the FCC control over the internet, do you really think it's just going to end with they want to make it that people can't be charged more for going on certain websites? Or is it going to be the case that they're going to start censoring politically incorrect speech, considering the sort of things that people are often proposing in Congress, like banning hate speech and that sort of thing, which they've already done in Europe, where they have net neutrality and the government has control over the internet.
Yeah, and now you got Britain that's like, you know, banned Donald Trump because he tweeted some like ultra right wing thing about like Muslim people beating up on, or like some hate group in England or whatever, and they're like, they refuse to have him over there now.
Right, because I'm sure he didn't have a clue who he was retweeting. He just saw some videos of some Muslims beating up some white people, and he got offended by it, and he decided to retweet it. But then that became a whole tiff between him and the Prime Minister of the UK, and now he's been disinvited. But I've heard that the trip is still supposed to happen sometime next year, and that it was all kind of just drama.
Yeah, it's just ruffled feathers and offended feelings and whatever, which is bull crap. Well, speaking of Trump, there was like, he did some speech recently where like, didn't he slur his words really badly? I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't see the video, but I saw that Morning Joe Scarborough was criticizing him over it, and probably because he's bitter that Trump had accused him of killing his intern.
I saw like the ending of it, and he is just like slurring his words bad. Like, it's not even like classy, like a Winston Churchill thing. Like, I was like, man, he must have hit the sauce hard before he had to go make a speech. And we saw it in some people from my church were watching it, and we were just like laughing our heads off. And I was like, man, this is a fun presidential run. This is a fun ride.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really can't think of anything else for closing remarks to say. Unless you got something.
No, I think we kind of covered it. Did anything happen with Timbox recently? I can't really think of anything.
No, I haven't. Yeah, I haven't heard anything on Timbox. It hasn't been posted up in Slack. I can't really think of anything else that's happened to me other than just like me announcing my graduation. And that's kind of like about it. So
looks like Timbox's year-end message here. For me, it was the year of Samurai Jack's ill-fated girlfriend Ashi. Some year-in-review video he made on Facebook.
Okay,
it's all about mourning Ashi, I guess.
Didn't Peter Fay say some stupid stuff recently? I mean, he always says stupid stuff, but
did he? Did Daft post them on the chat or something?
Like, maybe in the past couple weeks, but I can't even remember what they are, so.
It's just the usual depraved stuff.
Yeah, it's nothing different.
Yeah, I think we've had enough here.
Yeah, hour and 7 minutes. This has got to be a record for us that a podcast lasted this long, or lasted this short, I should say, when it's always usually like 2.5 hours.
Okay, I'll read one tweet from Peter.
Do you want to
the new folks I'm following and some old ones. Some of my tweets may seem a bit rough and rugged, but deep down I'm a big, soft, sensitive squoosher with a kind heart.
Okay. I was going to say, you saw Thor 3 last night. Do you want to talk about that?
Okay, sure. Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Probably one of the best comic movies this year. Maybe the best one this year.
Yeah.
I don't really have any complaints about it.
It was a fun movie.
It had a lot of humor and a lot of action. Love the Immigrant Song from Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
They played that at the start and at the end, I guess, because they liked it so much.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Now I remember the song. Yeah, and like that was a fun movie to watch. Like, I came out of there going, I could watch this again, and feel like I saw like a complete fun movie. Like, I know with you, like, since, like, didn't you say it kind of reminds, because isn't like there's that thing with like Planet Hulk where Hulk just fights people? Like, I guess they took some elements from that and put it in this movie.
Yeah, they had in the credits a section where they had a special thanks in between all the millions of digital artists they were thanking. And they mentioned Greg Pak, who did the Planet Hulk comics. So I guess they're kind of acknowledging that they did take some inspiration from that.
Yeah.
And Walt Simonson, who did the Thor Ragnarok arc in the 80s in the comics, where Executioner dies, which they had in this. And the stuff with Surtur. And
which character was Executioner? Was that
it was Scourge, the guy with the bald guy with the black paint on his head that had the big axe.
Oh, okay, I thought it was. The guy that ran the planet, and I can't think of his name as an actor. Jeff Goldblum.
The Grandmaster.
Oh, that's the Grandmaster. Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking of when that guy jumps off the plane and starts shooting at the hella zombies, and then he ends up getting stabbed through the heart by Hela, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, that was a pretty cool death scene, and
yeah,
he has the whole destruction of Asgard, which is very spectacular at the end.
Yeah, I got a feeling like that movie was just Jeff Goldblum being Jeff Goldblum. It's like, Jeff Goldblum, if you ran a planet and this is how it is, what would your character be? And that's all we ask from you. So we're just, all right, and action, and then that's the role we got. Like, I honestly think, like, that's just Jeff Goldblum, like, in a nutshell.
Jeff Goldblum was like, I've got to have slaves, but I can't call them slaves.
Yeah. he's kind of like the another version of Robert Downey Jr. Like, I don't think Robert Downey Jr. just can act. He's always like himself, especially as Iron Man. Like, that's just him.
I mean, that's good if they come across that way, because I'm sure that's how they want to see him. You know, they want to see him genuine.
Yeah. But, speaking of movies. Okay, so Ready Player One, I am impressed to see, because it's got a freaking Gundam in it. So I'm going to count Ready Player One as our second time that Gundam has been in a live action form. I am counting that. I don't care what these Gundam fan nerds say. Like, oh, it's just a homage. It's not a real Gundam movie. I say, yes, it is, because it's a Gundam in a movie. So that's my defense there.
They wouldn't even consider G-Savior a real Gundam movie.
Whereas I consider G-Savior a real Gundam movie, because it is a real Gundam movie. I mean, like, it really happened in terms of, like, there was a Gundam, they made a live-action movie, there you go. Yeah, that's where me and a lot of people in the Gundam community are probably going to disagree. Whereas I'm like, well, that's what it is, so.
They would be like, but it's not on the website.
Yeah, I have it on DVD. And then also,
we reviewed it. It's real.
Yeah, we reviewed it. It's real. It's a real thing. It's on YouTube, the full version, I'm sure, because Bandai isn't going to bother pulling it for copyright. Like, why would they? Like, oh, we're not touching that. So,
it's on there.
I'm pretty sure it is. Wow. Also, freaking Battle Angel Alita looks really good too.
Oh yeah, they did the release a trailer for that.
Yeah, I'm super stoked. Like, there's so many good movies come out in 2018, and then there's Pacific Rim 2. There's
I saw a trailer for Thor. It looked pretty good.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing Pacific Rim 2. And then you got the Avengers.
Star Wars coming out.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, Star Wars, of course. But then you got the Avengers movie.
Yeah, they got to lead into that at the end of Thor, where they see the big spaceship, which is like Thanos' ship.
Yeah.
But then there's a movie in between, which is weird, because they've got Black Panther coming out before the Avengers comes out.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why.
I just don't care to see Black Panther. I just like, I don't, I mean, I wasn't like, oh my gosh, Black Panther's my favorite. Like, I just don't care. So I'm probably going to skip that movie. I haven't even seen Doctor Strange yet. I don't know. Like, that's all the movies I can think of.
Doctor Strange was pretty good, but, he was in there briefly in the Thor movie, but yeah, I guess you don't really need to have seen Doctor Strange to see Thor.
Yeah, I mean, like, he was in the very beginning, and that was about it. And, yeah, and I like how in the Thor movie, they kind of, like, basically wrote off Natalie Portman's character. Where it was just a joke. It was just like, oh.
They mentioned that they broke up.
Yeah, well, it was like, she's like, yeah, she broke up with you, Thor. And Thor's like, no, I broke up with her. And we're history. And then that was it.
Because there were like, some random girls that were on the street, and they were like, sorry, you broke up with her. Somehow they know all about it.
Yeah.
And then they're just random people that want to
kill what a great way to write off Natalie Portman's character. Because apparently that was always the weakest part of the first two Thor movies, was that she was in there. And it's true. And, but, you know, now she's not, since they don't need her for anything for, event, like, Marvel stuff.
Yeah, this was more of a cosmic movie where Thor is always going through outer space. He's not like in a little town in New Mexico fighting a monster or anything. He's going through space and battling on alien planets. And so it was like more in the mode of what Infinity Wars is going to be like, where there's probably not going to be very much of it set on Earth. I think a lot of it's going to be set in space on Thanos' spaceship and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh crap! There's that big acquisition between like Fox and Disney.
Yeah, I mean that's what's the next stage after Thanos, is Disney will acquire the X-Men and the Fantastic Four, and then to make up for all these Marvel actors that have been wanting to quit for so long.
Yeah,
you know, if they ever actually let Downey Jr. hang up his cape, they'll bring in Hugh Jackman and have him come back as Wolverine or something, you know, because he made some comment like he would consider doing the role again if he got to be alongside the Avengers or something.
Okay.
So that, I think, is what they're going for. They're trying to get, you know, another popular superhero in there to replace Iron Man if he ends up leaving, or if Captain America or Thor don't want to be in any more movies. Or
wait, because isn't Wolverine part of the Avengers, or was at one point or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
They've had him in there every now and then from like 2005 on or so. So okay. There's some history of Wolverine being on the Avengers in the comics, and
I mean Spider-Man was part of the Avengers too. All that
close to it either.
I mean,
yeah, that's true. Spider-Man, he's going to be on the Infinity Wars movie. They showed him in the trailer.
Oh yeah, of course. I haven't even seen the recent Spider-Man movie. So that's another one.
Oh, it's sort of a follow-up on Civil War.
Okay.
Like the first part of the movie is like a recap of Civil War from Spider-Man's perspective, and then the rest of it is he's fighting the Vulture.
Oh, okay.
But it's very much a 2017 movie where they've got like student that refuses to go in the Washington Monument because it was built by slaves. And,
Wait, that was in the movie?
Yeah, they had like the movie is like constantly making points about these various politically correct issues, and all the white characters from Peter's high school other than Peter have been turned into minorities. Like Mary Jane and Flash Thompson and et cetera, they've become Indian and black and Asian and so on and so forth.
I was going to say, like, is Peter going to, like, the worst inner city circle or something? Like, does he live in the ghetto or something? I mean...
They're just trying to be multicultural, I suppose, but they, you know, basically they wanted, from what I can tell, to do a the movie with the Spider-Man that they introduced a few years ago when they kill off Peter Parker, the gay black Mexican Spider-Man from the comic books, Miles Morales, because that's the diverse Spider-Man that represents the new America and everything. And I can't have a white male in the role. And Stan Lee said, no, Peter Parker is Spider-Man. You can do whatever you want in the comics for boosting sales and gimmicks and all that for short-term changes, but I don't want that on the big screen. So now instead they're doing a CGI movie with Miles Morales that's coming out next year. I guess they're going to have animated movies of Spider-Man and live-action movies of Spider-Man, and Spider-Man's going to be in the Avengers movie. And, you know, it's going to be like what they're doing with Star Wars, where there's going to be a million different Spider-Man things coming out at once. They've got the Spider-Man TV show cartoon as well, and that's a different thing. So
yeah,
they've got all these different versions of Spider-Man out there, and the Spider-Man game for PS4, you know. I mean, he's still a very popular character, so I'm sure he'll probably be in every Avengers movie from now on. And if they can get Wolverine, even if they can't get Hugh Jackman back, they'll probably put him in there with a new actor.
I mean, they can always do a, like a, freaking, oh my gosh, why?
What they did with Peter Cushing, but do it with, like, Hugh Jackman. Just make a CGI version of Hugh Jackman and put him in there.
Who is Samuel L. Jackson's character in those Avengers movies?
Oh, Nick Fury.
Yes, okay. I know they made it, I think I either still own this or I'm not sure if I got rid of it, but, yeah, I mean, there is a Wolverine Nick Fury comic out there. I mean, they could always make a Wolverine Nick Fury movie, so anything's possible now.
Put Hugh Jackman and Samuel L. Jackson together in some sort of team-up movie?
Yeah.
I guess that could work.
I mean, like, if they're basing it off comics, that is a comic that did happen, was a team-up with Nick Fury and Wolverine.
What was the last time they showed Nick Fury? I feel like he hasn't been in them for a while.
I thought it was Winter Soldier was the last time he was in it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see him in Civil War at all.
Yeah, I don't think he was in Civil War. I think it probably was Winter Soldier the last time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't think he's appeared in S.H.I.E.L.D. since then. S.H.I.E.L.D. went off on a... Have you ever seen any of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
No, I haven't seen a single episode of that show.
Okay. Occasionally they tie it in with the movies, but they went off on this weird direction with the... And Samuel Jackson has shown up in a few episodes, but not very often.
Mm-hmm.
And probably not in a few years.
Because it's too expensive to have him on?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But they, like the new season, they went into outer space, and there's like these CGI alien ripoffs that look just like the aliens from the Alien movies.
Yeah.
And they're in some sort of alternate future world where the Earth has been destroyed, and they're on a spaceship, and it's really weird the direction they've gone in with that. And Josh thinks that's to promote Infinity War, because I guess everything is supposed to promote Infinity War now, but I don't know. I think that show's going to get canceled soon. It's been on the air for a while, and it doesn't really do that well in ratings.
Oh, so it's one of those shows that it's ran its course.
Well, the question is, do they want to just keep it going so that they can have it tie into every movie that comes out in order to try to build hype for them?
Mm-hmm.
Because the movies generate so much money that then it can offset the low amount of ratings that they get. But at some point, I think they're going to want to do something new. And they probably should have just had a new show that was a sci-fi show instead of bringing all these random spy characters into space. Because it's kind of like Moonraker, you know, where it's just like, wait, now James Bond is in space, but you're just sticking random Star Wars stuff in here just because that's popular. And like, this is the new Star Wars renaissance. Disney controls Marvel, Disney controls Star Wars. Let's just make all the Marvel stuff into Star Wars now, too.
Let's just do a Star Wars-Marvel crossover and see how that goes.
That's going to be next, yeah. Darth Vader versus Captain America or something.
Gosh, that is... Man, you're going to have two different fan bases at each other's throats. They're already vicious enough as it is.
Yeah, they'll be like, Darth Vader has to win because Captain America is a Nazi. Or something like that.
You're going to be like, well, Darth Vader's obviously going to win because he has the Force and Captain America does not have the Force. And I don't believe that Captain America's shield can block the Force powers from Darth Vader. Therefore, Darth Vader is the ultimate champion of this battle. If it ever happens in my fanfiction, the two live action adaptation. So, that's kind of the dialect I'm going to hear if that ever happens. So.
Light Lucario will have to chime in and say, well, actually, Darth Vader is not as bad as Captain America because Darth Vader only destroyed planets, which are fictional. And he's like Vegeta. And Captain America, he's just another Stroheim, and he's a Nazi.
Stupid woman. Anyways, but...
and then the TV Tropes guy will jump in and he'll be like, well, I've analyzed the video game data of Marvel versus Capcom versus Star Wars 7, and I've decided that actually the stats on Captain America are 3% higher, so I think Light Lucario, you and I agree here, and we ought to go on a date. You know, something like that will be in his...
Please come over to my parents' house and have relations with me. Because, you know, I am the greatest nerd you ever knew on the internet form of Toon Zone. That's always my to-go nerd voice for anybody I'm trying to make fun of, so.
Yeah. Josh linked to some post of his.
Oh, God. Yeah, it was something along with, like, what was it, Ace Attorney, and how, like, oh, this reminds me of an argument in an Ace Attorney game that is comparable to the topic at hand in this episode of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Please look at my spoiler tag and make sure that all these are in correct order, and it will make sense and will support my rhetoric on this forum post. Thank you.
He like linked some Twitch video he did when he was streaming the game where he had a breakdown over the game.
Oh, now I feel inclined to subscribe to his Twitch and harass him whenever he goes live.
You should go on there and be like, why have you not been banned from Toon Zone yet? You're the worst.
Why are you... Okay, why are you still on Toon Zone? And then I kindly tell Light Lucario, bye, 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 and I get banned. But for, you know what, for all it's worth, it was totally worth it, so. Well, I think we got a good chunk of closing remarks on this last part of this podcast. I'd say this is pretty successful, so.
Yeah, much, well, maybe the same length. What's the length on it?
I got an hour and 26, so.
Okay, twice as long as the actual show. That's not surprising.
We gotta talk, the key thing is if we run out of topics, it's just like, so how about them, comic book shows and movies? Oh, well, let me tell you something about that. And then we just go and, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen Justice League yet, or this would have been even
longer. Oh, crap, I did see Justice League.
Well, you can just comment on it then.
All right, I will comment on Justice League. So, I have to say, I did like Justice League. And I also have to say, I think the end of Justice League fits perfectly with the theme of, like, how Justice League is compared to, like, how I view it. Because they all come together at the end, and they work together, and that's usually how I just imagine how Justice League works. So, but other than that, like, the movie was not trying to be super dark or confusing. It all made relative sense. No, it's not as good as Wonder Woman, but it's in the right direction. And that's all I really got to say about Justice League. I honestly liked it. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed Justice League. And the post-credit scenes at the end of Justice League is setting up for, like, a Legion of Doom, which I'm kind of interested in. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, so this was originally supposed to be a two-part movie. And I think Infinity Wars is also supposed to be a two-part movie.
I thought Infinity Wars was supposed to be two parts.
Yeah, I think it still is.
Okay.
But they aren't necessarily going to call it Infinity Wars Part 1 and Part 2. No.
Yeah.
They might give it a different name for the second one, like Infinity Gauntlet or Infinity Crusades or the other ones from the comics.
Yeah.
But I think that they eventually scrapped the second part and decided that they were just going to wait and see and try to make the first one a little more self-contained. But did it seem like there were a lot of loose ends still? Like there, other than that Legion of Doom thing, or it was mostly self-contained, or
yeah. I honestly, like, the length for Justice League was perfect, to be honest. Like, because Batman vs. Superman was too freaking long. And then I hear the extended cut is like, oh, it's longer, but it's going to tie in a bunch of stuff. It's like, what does it matter?
This one was exactly 2 hours for
it was close,
Justice
no, it
League,
was,
right?
Yeah, it was close to 2 hours, and it felt like it was a right-paced movie. It felt right. It didn't feel like it drug on for far too long, so...
Well, I actually seen people complaining that it was too short and saying, like,
well, yeah, they're
going to
complain
more
it's too
time
short.
On the characters.
The characters have already been. I mean, like, they haven't, like, yeah, there's probably, like Aquaman, Flash, and. No, that's
Cyborg.
It. Cyborg. Like, they had their character thing. They got introduced. I got to know everything about them, and I was good with that. So these people want to expect, like, a 3.5 hour long movie where it goes into, like, an hour long detail of these people's. Backstory, like, we kind of already know their backstory, and Wonder Woman and Batman are already well established based on Batman versus Superman in the Wonder Woman movie. So, like, we don't need to know their other backstory again. We've got that.
Yeah,
what? Those are just butthurt DC fans, and they can go away for all I care.
Aquaman and Cyborg and the Flash are all supposed to get solo movies after this anyway. That'll probably cover their origin more and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So if they want that, that'll happen.
Yeah. But at least, I mean, based on this movie, I was like, hey, this ain't bad. I mean, like, it's one of those, like, you had to see Batman versus Superman to make sense. But, you know, if you did, then it will make sense. And if you don't, you're just like, oh, well, okay, I guess this is how it is. So, like, my parents were confused. And I was like, well, you have to sit down for 2.5 hours and watch Batman vs. Superman.
No, they didn't see that one.
No, they haven't seen that yet. I'm not going to make them see it. It's if they want to, they can. I know I'm not going to rewatch that movie.
Yeah. I haven't seen the extended version, but I've seen the director's... Not the director's cut, but the version that was in theaters.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't say as to whether the extended version is better or worse. I know they made it an R-rated version. It was the longer version, and I don't know what's in there that makes it R-rated. Just more violence, I suppose.
Is it a sex scene with Superman and Lois Lane? Because that could almost be worth it.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, but I don't think so.
Well, you almost had me sold there.
Yeah.
All right, now we're at an hour and a half. I mean,
yeah. I guess that's all. All
right. So, Merry Christmas to all you guys! Thanks for, like, sticking around for our comic book movie rants. As you've heard us say these rants, like, probably like 10 other times or 15 times about every other podcast, because it usually is brought up. But that's the joy of closing remarks. So.
Yeah, if I see Justice League at some point, maybe in the next episode, I'll talk about it some more.
Yeah, I mean, if you see it and you start talking about it, you're going to remember more than I will. So then I'll be like, oh yeah, I do remember that scene. So.
Yeah. But yeah, I haven't seen it yet. Maybe I'll see it soon. And we'll probably do a review of Star Wars since we did with the other ones.
That'll be our podcast for the new year or New Year's pod. Like, I'm seeing it Christmas Day as I usually do with the family. It was one of those, like, it's a toss-up between Star Wars or Jumanji. And I wouldn't mind seeing Jumanji. But it's like, Star Wars has been a tradition for the past 3 years now, so let's just keep that going. And I'm like, oh, I can always watch Jumanji later.
I noticed that at the theater they already had a poster up for not the Star Wars movie that's about to come out, but the Star Wars movie after the Star Wars movie that's about to come out. There was one that just said Star Wars Solo, May 2018.
Wait,
so,
May 2018?
Yeah, the Han Solo one. They're putting it out.
Wow.
Really not long from now.
Yeah, I figured, like, it's just
May 25th, 2018. So it's only six months away. And I thought that was a really strange thing to see. Because I didn't realize that it was that soon.
Yeah.
Because there's no trailer or anything.
I guess the trailer's going to come out like probably after the beginning of the new year, so.
Yeah, or, and no, B, if because anything, it's Super Bowl, so Super shortly Sunday, after.
Super Bowl Sunday, they're going to have it, as they usually would do for these movies, so.
Okay, that's probably
true. I can bet your biscuits that Star Wars solo movie is going to be like on Super Bowl Sunday, so.
And then episode 9 is supposed to come out December of 2019. So I think that's kind of weird. They've been doing them one a year, and then they do one 6 months later, and then 18 months after that. Like, why wouldn't they just stick with the December for the solo one?
You know what's something that we haven't done in 18 months?
A Gundam review?
No. Takashi versus Tomino. Like, I haven't totally forgotten, but like, we just haven't. I mean, now that I'm out of school, I would have more time to sit down and watch Tomino or Takahashi shows. No, it's something like I've thought about, and we probably should really focus on it since I haven't brought it up in like maybe 6 months or a year. I don't know.
You haven't finished Wing yet, have you?
I'm still watching Wing. Yeah.
I think we'll talk about that when we do the Star Wars.
Yeah, I can go. Really I can finish. I mean, I have a whole lot of ammo to talk about Gundam Wing, but like, I can wait to the Star Wars review.
Okay. Yeah, you might as well just finish it all, and you probably watch Endless Waltz after that, huh?
Yeah, that'd be true. I can probably squeeze that in. It depends. So, all right, man. Well,
it's still another probably 2 or 3 weeks till we record again after this. If the next one is Star Wars.
Yeah, well, I mean, so, if we record, like, after Christmas sometime for Star Wars, then we get that out by, like, after the new year, then we're set for what we got to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
I know we plan all this stuff, and then half of it never comes to fruition.
Right.
That's our science for how to run this podcast. But then again, thank you guys for listening. Have a wonderful Christmas, and we'll see you guys next time. More than likely, talk about Star Wars. Yeah, and I will end it with that.
On a frosty winter's night, a wagon appeared at the gates of Fort Klugman, carrying pioneers to the frontier. A young woman in the party called Delia was heavy with child. And though she had journeyed with the virile young men for nigh on 1 year, none had lain with her, though she was comely. And on this frosty winter's night, young Delia's water broke, almost freezing her to the seat of the wagon. And the pioneers beseeched the soldiers to grant them entrance so that she could give birth to her child in the hospital there. But due to an outbreak of syphilis among the soldiers, the hospital was full. And so there in the stable among the feed and tack and what's-this, Delia gave birth to a son whom she called Alvis, as was her wont. And since none of the men in the party were the father, it was decided among them that the birth of this child must truly be a miracle. And it was so, for above the fort there suddenly and miraculously appeared an awesome and mighty comet, and so brilliant was its light that there came from all the tribes which the soldiers had not yet decimated, shamans. And they rode upon buffalo, as was their heathen custom, bearing gifts, offerings of whiskey and firearms. And when the shamans saw the child, they were in awe, for he glowed as if bathed in a light which was truly not of this world. So does little...
Cody.
Does Cody glow by himself?
No.
Right, so plop him in there. I want to fire up those halogens.
That's dangerous. Light bulbs are way too hot.
Woman, the swaddling clothes are asbestos. Now wrap him up.
Asbestos?
Yeah, and his pistol's just a little .22. Couldn't hurt a flea.
What did I just this second tell you?
Come on, you idiot.